Welcome to One Weird Trick, a podcast giving advice for better living. Your hosts, Aaron and Cecily, have zero legal, medical, or psychological qualifications to give advice. Please consider any advice you receive from them as being from well-meaning, but human and imperfect friends. Please consult actual professionals for any serious legal, medical, or mental help you may need. And now, here's Cecily and Aaron.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to One Weird Trick, the show where we share tips and tricks to make your life better, easier, more fun. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And I think we got a great show for you today. First off, I'm going to be talking about how you can help your kids with the homework, or at least experiences I've had with helping my kid with homework. Then Cecily's going to talk about boundaries. Then we're going to consider some feedback people have sent in to the old OWT, One Weird Trick at swizzbowl.com mailbag. Who knows what kind of weird tricks await there in that mailbag?
I know it's in there.
Our first topic is mine. I got to talk about helping kids with homework. You know, I know this came up on a few of our monthly live streams, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, how I was worried about how the homeschooling during the pandemic was going to work out, and how last year it didn't go so great because there wasn't the technology there, and I don't think there was the resources there, and I was kind of nervous. And then the first couple weeks happened, and everything seemed to be very much more organized. And what happened is it was going so great, I took my eye off the ball a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And my 14-year-old, who's an eighth grader, got about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks behind in math because he hit a snag in his math homework or understanding it. And instead of reaching out to the teachers or letting me know about it, he just let it keep going and get piled up and piled up. And, you know, I was reviewing his stuff, and I started, I said, hey, what's going on with this math stuff? Let's dig into it. And he's like, oh, you know, can we look at it tomorrow? And I'm like, oh no. And yeah, turns out that he had hit a snag with linear equations and algebra. Mm-hmm. And just bailed.
Who amongst us has not?
Yeah, and the thing is this has happened before, where like when he hits a snag, you know, he sometimes kind of, I don't know whether he's embarrassed about it or what, but I was pretty upset because this is something we'd struggled with the last year too, and it's always such a struggle to get him caught back up. So I roll up my sleeves and we start helping him, but I'm frustrated, right? And what I see, and here's the thing, it's like what I find hardest to deal with when it comes to my kid is the things that he struggles with that I have either struggled with and have gotten over it, or the things I still struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things when I was a kid, I remember at almost this exact same age, I was kind of good at math and I took to it very easy. And I could always do that stuff in my head. I didn't have to like write things down and show, even, you know, long division, whatever. And when I started getting into like algebra and geometry, you no longer can kind of keep all that stuff, you know, when you're solving a linear equation and you're, you know, doing substitutions and distributions and things like that. You just have, there's a lot of accounting there, you know, keeping mm-hmm. track of positive and minus signs.
Yeah.
And I saw him doing the same damn shit where he wouldn't show his work and just do the math. Because if you show your work and you write all, it's like, here's what I'm doing, and I'm just going to carry that all that stuff down and just keep on. It takes a long time, but you can do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I kept on saying, it's like, you know, son, the thing is, you got to draw these diagrams out, and you got to put all your variables in a little chart, and you got to write down the equation, then you got to carefully substitute the stuff, and then you can start working on it. And he just kept on wanting to skip steps and skip steps. And at one point, these things came out of my mouth. You got to the damn math and show your damn work. And I instantly transported back 30 years into the past at my dad's kitchen table with algebra and him doing the same stuff to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh God, this isn't working. But that was like a 4 hour. I mean, we were spending like 3 to 4 hours a night, and it sucks because like he was behind, and he was not just behind, but he was also shaky on the fundamentals of where he kind of left off, which is why he got behind. So just like I'm having to learn algebra at high speed. This stuff is designed to be kind of slowly absorbed over several weeks, and now it's. So you know, he was getting upset and discouraged, and I was kind of getting upset and discouraged, and we called it for a night, and I remember coming upstairs and talking to you about, actually, you were doing a phone, like, I think during
I was on a Zoom call at work, and they heard all of this.
Yeah, the outburst, I was talking to you about it. I was like, man, I just really missed the mark as a dad today. And you said something along the lines of, you know, it's not the worst lesson in the world to learn that, like, if you lie to your dad and you try to hide a problem from him and it blows up in your face and you go down in flames, that the worst thing that's going to happen is he's going to sit down and help you until you get back on the right track, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There might be some shouting and stuff, but, like, you know, the worst thing's going to happen is that. So I used those kind of, like, those words, and the next day I sat him down and said, you know, I'm really sorry about, you know, how frustrated I was getting with math, but, you know, some of this stuff is stuff I struggled with when I was a kid, and, like, I had my dad up my ass with the math, and it's like, it's a lot of that kind of reliving. I got kind of gripped up. I said, but I just want you to know. And I told him that it's like, you know, the worst thing that's ever going to happen if you try to hide things and you start goofing up and you get way off track is I'm going to sit down with you and we're going to figure it out and we're going to do whatever it takes to get you back on track. And I appreciate that. Because he really took to it, and about 12 more hours of catch up stuff. We're finally going into this weekend. We got all caught up.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's great.
Yeah, but it's like, man, I find that that's the real struggle is when they're going through stuff that you had an issue with, and sometimes you gotta, you know, really slow things down and think about, you know, why you got here? Why are you having these kind of triggers? And not like lose, you know, the other thing I allow myself to happen sometimes is I get really discouraged if I don't do something perfectly or, you know, if I lose my cool a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's always better to kind of like forgive yourself and circle back around with the kid and try to figure out why you're in particular having trouble losing your cool. Cause like history homework and like English homework and science homework, I mean, I can help them with that, have infinite patience, but that math stuff, whew.
Yeah.
So
it's hard.
Yeah. And I think I'm just like, I settled in to do that at the start of the school year. It's like, well, I'm just going to help him with math every day. And he was doing so well that I just stopped and just, you know, thought, well, you're just crushing it. Finally, it's kind of clicking this year and nope, I'm going to have to really be hands-on probably throughout the rest of this half year, if not the rest of this year, just to make sure, you know.
It seems like it'll be much less grueling, though, and...
Yeah, 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 but yeah. You gotta let them...
But how's it going? Less yelling?
Much less, yeah, like since that one time with the peak frustration... yeah, like the other night I was helping him, I had to once remind him, it's like, hey, you know what you're doing. You're not showing your work and you're not doing the math. And look, you just flipped the minus sign. And, you know, that's what happens. So I think he's starting to learn the wisdom of that. But man, math, whew. Math is just really, really tedious and boring. Like that's like, you know, when I first sat down to help him, like, well, there's only six problems here. That's going to be, oh my God, you had to solve like 30 different problems just to get that one the solution to the one thing. And there's this one like cryptogram where we had to apply all these functional transformations to alphabet and
horrible,
but we did it. And hopefully, like, if we're only have to do that an hour a day from here on out, we won't ever have any marathon frustration sessions. But so I just wanted to share that with people because I know there's a lot of people now. You see it on Twitter. You see people talking about it on Facebook. I've gotten feedback on it that, you know, a lot of kids are doing this stuff at home. And there's challenges at all different ages. I was talking to my friend Jesse in Seattle, and he's got like an 8 or 9 year old that's like, you know, really doing foundational stuff. And it's easy to teach them, but then they don't have the same kind of focus and attention like a 14-year-old has. And then now I'm like, you know, I don't have any problems with like, you know, just like the basics of sitting still and learning things and like that. But it's more of just this stuff is hard, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's no longer 2 plus 2 equals 4 or memorizing multiplication tables. Like, holy hell, solve for X. So, anyway, if there's any other parents out there struggling with it, the key thing was me just remembering, like, how things went with my dad. And the lesson I learned from doing math with my dad is I don't ever want to have to help my dad with homework.
But yeah, it must be, it's just nice to have someone whose brain works the way that yours does.
Yeah.
Helping them figure it out.
But I was playing through and I feel like dad's brain does work the same way as me. It's just that he
never made the connection.
He never made a connection and also just didn't have the same skills and resources I did as far as like slowing things down and, you know. But what he did, like I said, what my dad was able to move the ball a little bit further enough to where it's like maybe I wasn't able to stop from pounding the table. But I was able to stop at and maybe Jack.
But you
will
didn't
be...
pound him in the face.
No, I didn't call him. I didn't call him a piece of shit. I didn't question his manliness at any time. Didn't cuff him upside the head. But I feel like maybe when he sits down to help his kid with math, maybe they won't have to pound the table. Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe he'll forget all these lessons and who knows? Who knows what he'll struggle with?
Maybe his kid won't fall behind on schoolwork. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe his kid will do the goddamn math and show his goddamn work, maybe. Maybe.
You know, when I was a kid, my dad would be pounding the table right now.
That's right. That's right. He said, you don't even know how good you've got. My dad would pound that table, make my water shake like the T-Rex in Jurassic Park. Upset my stepmom's clients. So yeah, that's my one weird trick. Help your kids with the homework. Try to be as patient as you can because this really sucks for everybody. And also, goddamn, teachers deserve every penny we pay them, and probably more. 10 times that too.
Yeah, a lot more.
Like doing. I was just thinking, like, what is it like to do this, like, 15 times a day, have these like, no, you see, you forgot to flip the sign. No, when you multiply negative by net, no, you see what I mean, like, you did the order of operations wrong. Like, that's just, oh, the patience.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it. So hats off to you.
Yeah.
Cecily.
Thank you for what you do. Thank you for your service, teachers.
Tell us about boundaries.
All right. I can talk about some boundaries here. So, boundaries, what are they? How do you set them for yourself, your friends, your family? How do you maintain them once you've set them? And how do you recognize and respect someone else's boundaries? Mm. All things I'm going to talk about. Okay, so first of all, boundaries are like a wall, or I like to think of them as like road lines, the painted lines on the road. You know, it's something you can cross. It's not a physical boundary, but it's something you should see and respect. You know, it's a clearly established place where you end and the other person begins. It's not something you can touch, but it can very much be violated. So boundaries, as far as setting them, can be really hard to do. Because first of all, you have to know where your personal limits are before you can set those boundaries. And that takes some self-exploration, which can be hard. Sometimes you know it up front and it's easy. Like, you are definitely not going to do anal on your first date with the guy you just met at Home Depot.
Yeah.
That's easy. But it can also be really hard. Like, your boss is asking you to take on projects that are outside of your job scope, but you aren't being compensated and you're not being appreciated or recognized for your work. You know, you have to reflect on yourself and your limits and understand that first without the feedback from those other people who might make your boundaries more flexible. So knowing when and if you need to set boundaries means exploring those uncomfortable feelings from your interactions. You know, the red flags that tell you that you don't feel so good after or during that interaction because you feel emotionally drained or someone was asking too much of you. You know, if you want to be a good employee, spouse, and friend, but those people are imposing on you and your resentment towards them grows, and it will, then you might need to take a step back and explore that feeling. You know, exploring these feelings might be especially hard because of the environment and the people who raised you. you know, you might have to deal with some internal conditioning that made your boundaries shaky or non-existent to begin with. And that sounds really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good news is you're not alone. You have your friends, your family, your therapist, your yoga group, whatever your support system is. Utilize that to help you strengthen your resolve.
I bet hot yoga with masks on is just no fun right now.
No, maybe that's outdoors. Wait, how do you do hot yoga outdoors? That's what I'm saying.
Like wintertime hot yoga indoor. That sounds like a petri dish that I want no part of. Maybe ditch your yoga group and find
it's an internet yoga group.
There you go.
They're doing it through Zoom calls, which is possible.
I don't even know what hot yoga means.
It just means you like the temperature is turned up. And
is it literally exactly what I thought? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Share those body fluids. Just shake it everywhere like a wet dog.
Okay. So you need those people, whoever they are, mm-hmm. ask them for advice and they'll help keep you honest. The practice of establishing boundaries also helps you understand your own identity, you know, who you are better as well. So who should I set these boundaries for? It should be for every relationship and interaction in your life, because it's not a punishment. This is where you end and that other person begins. So between parent and child, sexual relationships, friendships, your doctor, the clerk at the checkout counter, all these people have boundaries and some of them are already implied. Like you wouldn't invite your gynecologist out for a drink and you wouldn't ask the C-store clerk to check out this weird bump you have, right?
Right.
But we're here to talk about the ones that you do have to define, set, and communicate.
And there's might be some people like, well, I don't have any boundaries with my best friend, or I don't have any boundaries with like my mate, or I don't have any boundaries with whatever. And unfortunately, if that's true, that means you're in a meshed relationship. And that is not healthy, because that's the boundary is like where you begin or where you end and the other person begins. And if you mm-hmm. don't do that, you're either violating someone else's boundaries, they're violating you, or they're just completely enmeshed emotionally. And there's all kinds of bad things there. So it's not good to have no boundaries.
Right. So you have to communicate it sometimes. The more direct, the better. Like, you need to tell your boss that the project is outside of your scope and you are occupied enough with your own tasks. Or when Home Depot guy knocks on the back door, let him know that's something you're not ready for on the first date.
Jesus Christ, would you stop talking about how we met? I swear, it's so embarrassing. God.
Now, being direct doesn't mean that you have to be mean or that you have to feel guilty. You know, use your I statements. Instead of "you make me uncomfortable," you can say "I need space." Think of it as self-empowerment, because it is. Without that self-empowerment, you'll be left feeling emotionally drained and feeling taken advantage of. In the most ideal of circumstances, you'll be respected immediately and forever after. Your boss will agree with you and will stop taking advantage of you. And also, here's a bonus for the terrific work you've done. I can't imagine why you're working in this like Victorian bank, but you know, that's just what you're doing to your bosses.
It's like Mr. Scrooge is about to cancel Christmas.
However, there are some people who just don't understand boundaries, or you may meet the boundary pusher. They come in all forms: malicious, inconsiderate, or just plain disrespectful. You know, your boss agrees, "Yes, of course, how silly of me to ask that of you." And then a few weeks later, you notice that he's slipping back to his old habits and asking again and testing that boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Or your sexual partner continues to ask for something that you aren't ready to, or don't want to do. Or your friend keeps showing up late or just canceling your plans altogether.
Mm.
You've got to stay firm. Recall the conversation where that boundary was established and establish it again. Check in with that support group to stay strong. You can journal about it and read about your own thoughts again to remind yourself. And if they don't stop, then at this point you have to establish consequences. And I think, you know, this is circumstantial. It's a matter of preference, but you either have to take action or sacrifice your sanity. If your boss continues to push, find a new job, run it up the chain, or get comfortable being disrespected.
Mm-hmm.
if your friend can't make it a priority to be with you, then respect yourself to know that they're not a great friend. If your dad continues to come over and read your mail, then you might have to take further actions to identify exactly what that relationship even is and how what benefit it holds for you. Mm-hmm. We're all about self-care here. And I hope no one has to experience this person. But if you do, you're not alone with those tough decisions and conversations. So at this point, Aaron, you might be thinking, have I disrespected somebody's boundaries?
Me?
How do I recognize that someone set a boundary that I should respect? Good question, Aaron. I'll give you some very easy examples. Someone wearing earbuds and looking at their phone or reading a book is not looking for engagement or conversation with you. You listen to One Weird Trick every week and decided to establish some safe words in the bedroom. Boom! Boundary achieved. Some harder ones. Your teenager asked you to please stop tossing their bedroom and reading their diary. Respect that person's personhood. This might be your child, but you don't own them as a person, and you don't want them to grow up with unsafe boundaries between their own relationships, right? You stop to chat at the water cooler with Susie every day. It ends up being a 15-minute conversation where she's slowly backing away and seems uncomfortable. Read her body language and try to paint that line in the road. You are now a self-empowered person, so you can pass it on and talk to them about it. Hey, Suze, I feel like I talked your ear off. And if Susie enthusiastically agrees, there's your confirmation. Take note and maintain self-awareness with how you're interacting with others in the world without being overly critical of yourself either. So that's it. There it is. My one weird trick. Find yourself by finding your boundaries.
Yeah, boundaries are a really cool concept. I've read a lot of stuff back in the day. And it's good because like a lot of people, you know, are skittish about setting boundaries, especially with people that they love or they're scared to lose that relationship. And I think it's interesting because a lot of times when people don't set boundaries and those things continually be violated, it turns they turn those boundaries into walls. Like if you heard about people being walled off or they have thick emotional armor, a lot of times people brag about that kind of stuff. But that's not. You know, boundaries are flexible. Boundaries can allow you to receive emotional feedback and good things where like walls and armor are just impermeable. It's a coping mechanism to keep you from being hurt, but it also can keep you from being, you know, they're not flexible. They're hard to bring into new relationships and the new situations because, you know, they're usually formed in response to, like I said, people like a teenager that doesn't have any autonomy or individuality at home. So yeah, it's like, I think, that's great for everyone to learn about that. The way you visualize them as like signs in the road, I think is really great.
Paint on the road. Yeah.
Paint on the road. One of the things my therapist said is to visualize them like shields, like in the science fiction show, like Star Trek.
Like Dune.
Yeah, or like it's stuff that like, you know, it's there, but it's like it's not substantial. Mm-hmm. You know, you can lower them with people that you trust. You can also raise them. You can also tune them to where like maybe when like a boss is giving you criticism, you can like hear the facts and information, but you can like let the like negative feelings that you might be, you know, it's like, oh, God, I'm a bad person. No, leave that. And just take in the information, or you can just like, you know, set them the red alert and just completely block a person out. But they're not the same as walls, which are just, you know, you can't do that with walls. You can't do that with armor, but shields, boundaries, those flexible things that we can extend and retract as needed. Those are the way to go. Do you have any like books on?
Yeah, I have some recommended reading because of course I do. There's a book very simply called Boundaries, Where You End and I Begin.
That's
by
the one.
Anne Catherine.
It's a good one.
And I've got that link in the show notes as well. That's all I got. Just that one.
Well, all right. Now it's time for our advice segment.
Let's hear from the people.
For if people want a weird trick or want to share a weird trick with us or updates. as the case may be, feedback on previous shows, send that stuff in to owt@swizzbowl.com, and we will try to generate those weird tricks. So last week we got an email from Single Black Female requesting some help on building that social networks and finding new people, especially in context of the coronavirus that we're living through. She sent an update with some answers to the questions we asked and kind of like more information about her whole situation. This is what she says. She says, you asked for some additional details. I will provide that. First, I must say it is so disheartening to hear that men are intimidated by smart, attractive, tall women.
Same.
I thought.
Same, girl, same.
That confidence gets stronger the more you age. I think that's true. Like,
I do think that's true. It has for me, at least.
I think the person you end up finding will be a real confident person because they are going to be confident enough to approach you and to engage in relationships.
Yeah.
But you know, less confident people are going to try to cut you down to size or tear you down or, you know, neg you and all that kind of stuff. So it's not to be discouraging, but you know, you're a prize and should be treated as such. She says, then again, I have my own struggles, so who am I to judge? Speaking of my own struggles, I've outlined them below. Under the subject social awkwardness, she elaborates, my mind is always going. I usually have a list of things I want to get done during the day, along with a general sense of time of day I'd like to see those things get done. Thus, I'm always thinking about the next thing I have to do. It makes it difficult for me to be present and to make eye contact because I am thinking about what's next. Man, I identify with this so fucking hard. I get lost in my thoughts a lot of times. I get like, I'll be having a conversation and someone will say something that triggers something that I need to remember to do. And then like, I can lose like 20 seconds of conversation, in my own little world. I'm like, oh fuck, what they're waiting for me to say something. Oh my God. Her example is I've had people say you didn't speak to me when we passed each other on the street and I didn't even see them because I was not looking at faces. Just aware of other people's presence. Mm-hmm. This feedback has only made things worse. Now I'm always wondering, am I being present? And am I making eye contact? Am I making good small talk? How much is too much eye contact? How much small talk is too much? I know. I'm too much of a perfectionist, and I'm probably putting way too much pressure on myself in these situations for meeting people. Also, I'm incredibly shy, so not making eye contact also plays in all that. These factors lead into my social awkwardness as a never-ending cycle.
That's kind of funny because I feel the exact opposite. Like, I'm socially awkward because I'm hyper observant and just aware of everything and everyone and all the time, what they're doing, you know, thinking way too much about it. What must these people be thinking of me? Because I'm thinking about them like this, you know, which is never true.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how long you've been listening to the show, but a few shows ago, I did some like different sessions on how you can get to be more of a people person or get to be more, more social skills we're talking about. And I think you've got to, you know, if you're trying to improve at anything, you know, if you're trying to get better at a golf swing, if you're trying to get better at a basketball shot, if you're trying to get better at crocheting, I don't know, whatever. It's usually best to work at one thing at a time. Instead of trying to, you know, if you're working on keeping your shoulders straight and keeping your head down and keeping your wrists just so and locking your thumbs and all whatever fuck you do in golf, you're gonna have a lot bigger problem than if you just take one thing at a time. So like, I think of one of those things that you're struggling with, maybe you can just focus on one thing. Like if you're walking down the street and not aware of people's presence, you know, work on just kind of making eye contact with everyone you meet, not like staring, but so here's my idea. When I was working on it, I would make eye contact with people, and then when they might make eye contact with me, I would like smile or incline my head and then wait to see if they would acknowledge. Because most people, when you do that, their eyes dart away. And it's like, oh, okay, well, they're not interested in interaction, and then I don't, you know, that's like I gave my nod, my wave, or my smile, and then I'm going to keep on going. But that's kind of like a little game you play. Like everybody you just kind of look in their eyes and see if they acknowledge, and if they do, acknowledge them and see if they acknowledge your acknowledgement. And you know, you can that's just stop right there. You know, then you're working on you're no longer just aware of people's presence. Like, you're not staring at your shoes and just watching these shadows go by. You're actually engaging with the world. And there's like 10 different skills that you have to work on individually. Because you're right, small talk, remembering people's names, putting them with faces, doing all that kind of stuff. I relate because I don't think of myself as a social person. So a lot of times when I'm meeting people for the first time, I'm actually so absorbed in the mechanics of what I'm doing. Like, hey, you got to shake their hand. You got to smile. And they go, oh, yeah. And what's your name? Oh, my. And a lot of that stuff, the high level details is kind of just, especially if I'm out of practice, because I feel like I got good at this 10 years ago when I was dating and like making new friends and I was switching a lot of jobs and doing all this other stuff. And like, it's like any other skill, you get rusty. Yeah. And now I've kind of become aware I'm a little rusty myself. But
rusty.
I think that's the thing. You got to slow things down and there's like six different things here. The perfectionist thing, something I super identify with too, which is one of those kind of self-defeating. Sounds really impressive. Oh, I'm a perfectionist, but it's actually, oh God, it's a curse.
Right, because sometimes it means you don't get things done at all because it's not perfect.
Yeah, and it also keeps you from like, well, if I can't do it perfect, is it worth doing?
Right.
But you know how you get perfect? Practice, you know. Aww. So it's one of those self-defeating cycles rather than a virtuous cycle. That's probably honestly why it's the never ending. There's a lot of interlocking things here. So pick one and don't have an expectation for it to get good at it right away, but just start doing it, you know?
Yeah.
If you want to work on eye contact, sounds like that's the base. I think that's the base, because if you sidle up to somebody looking at your shoes and be like, lovely day we're having, you're starting off in a social hole there. So maybe start with that and just to work on that one thing. And if your mind starts cluttering up with other stuff, you know, Cecily gave some advice on being present, you know, like just kind of clearing your mind. And it's tough. It's a lot of work, but it's kind of the only way forward.
It's worth it.
She says on location, as I mentioned, I relocated last year. I'm currently in the Bay Area. I love to hike. Have joined a meetup group that hikes occasionally.
Yay.
I've been advised on not hiking alone, and I heated that advice.
I hate that.
Huh?
I just hate that.
Oh, I'd hate hiking alone too. I've done it a couple times, but...
She's not saying she doesn't like doing it. She's just been advised not to
because it's not safe. Danger. Jesus Christ. Look at me and my male privilege.
Yep.
I'm also on the lookout for more meetup hikes. Because of my social awkwardness, I sometimes sign up for meetups, then flake out at the last minute. I'll try not to do this. That's a good... That's a good first step. It's like, you know what? If you got that anxiety, just kind of... Kind of go.
Facing your fear.
You need those reps, man. You need those practice.
I joined a couple years ago. I joined like a group called the 51%, because 51% of the population in the United States is women. And it's also some sort of like whiskey term about the mix in whiskey. So it was a women's whiskey group. And it was like, well, that's easy. You know, you can go and have a drink. And then, you know, you get kind of loosened up and it's easier to talk to people over drinks because it's just, you know... take the edge off of all those nerves.
Sure. Social lubricant, they say.
Yeah. And the first meetup thing was going on a tour in Louisville of a bunch of different distilleries.
Oh, yeah. I remember when you did this.
By myself. Huh. I got on a bus and a 2-hour drive and like just went and made a bunch of friends. It's crazy how easy that works. Because I ended up sitting next to this like... what was she? She was a breast cancer surgeon who was just as socially awkward as me. And that we made a connection over that and we were able to talk for like hours.
Yeah. See, that's the thing is like sometimes you just find the right person and it's like everything becomes easy.
Yeah. But, you know, if I hadn't have gone, if I
didn't, you didn't put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Right.
It was hard to do, but very rewarding. And then I never went back.
She's also saying the Bay Area is maybe not where she wants to stay, and her company's allowing people to work remote, so I'm considering other parts of the country.
Ooh,
this
is
another wrinkle to finding my ideal man. Do I look for him here or my new location? I mean, I wouldn't look for your ideal man at a location where you're going to move, because that's a whole...
Why?
No, I'm saying like if she's going to leave the Bay Area, don't find your ideal man there, because then you're setting up a potential deal breaker when you move.
Right. Yeah. But it does put extra pressure on a new relationship if you want to get with this person, make a connection, and then ask them to move.
Right.
Even if they're ready to. It's still like an added stress.
But there's tons of training wheel type men relationships that you can have. Just like get out there and get those reps in, you know, get go on some dates, and there's no pressure because, hey, these guys are not going to move with you to the new town anyway. So yeah, I feel like, yeah, this is the time to get some of those practice conversations, practice dates and all that. And you know what? I'm a big fan of, like, you know, if something one in a million happens, you have this great connection and like he's open to moving too. It's like, who knows what might happen, but like that's if you're setting up the expectation, you're going to find your forever guy in the Bay Area, but you don't want to live in the Bay Area. And if you find your forever guy in the Bay Area, then are you going to leave the Bay Area, and which one's more important, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Dating apps. Unfortunately, she already paid up for the eHarmony subscription. She said she will try again and pay for OK. I think OKCupid's free. I don't know what to pay. I know you can. I think you can pay.
Back in my day, it was free.
I just looked and it
says, but it wasn't no app.
It says it's a free dating app. So it's like maybe there's a pay version, but like, I don't know why. I mean, most of the pay options are stuff that you'd need as a, like, they help you stand out. And is if you're above average attractive woman, I don't feel like you need that on the dating apps. You're going to have plenty of attention usually.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can check that out. She's also said she considered spending money on a pro matchmaker. I wonder how that works. Does anyone have any experience with matchmaking?
Oh, I would love to interview a matchmaker if someone does that professionally still.
Yeah, because like I can see, like, essentially it's like OKCupid, except for someone does it for you instead of sifting through and finding compatibility. Because I think there's some math. There is room for math to kind of tell you,
oh yeah,
hey,
for sure,
these are people, not sure things, but like we can get rid of the sure not things. Like, oh, this
right,
is
right.
Just,
you don't have to wade through the fuckboys to get to some high quality people.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Who are just
right.
looking to get down to business.
Right. So I think it could. I wonder how that works. Like, I never considered like matchmaker,
make me a match. I think I've seen, they used to have like a TV, TV show about it, and there was a woman who did it for, you know, insanely wealthy people who didn't really have an option to go out and meet, like, you know, like B celebrity type of people.
Yeah.
Who, you know, I guess it would be hard to know someone's true intentions if they know everything about you.
Right.
And you know nothing about them, you know?
Yeah.
So kind of specialize in that.
Yeah, it would be.
I've seen The Bachelorette. You can go on The Bachelorette.
You can go on The Bachelorette. That's the thing. So
have these men competing for your heart.
Get a nice, tight 5-minute video package. get a GoPro, go surfing. That'll play up real well. Hiking. Oh man,
there
they love
go.
The outdoor stuff. She concludes, thanks so much for your comments. I should look for the right man and not just a man. I don't want to find someone to be disappointed. I believe in soulmates and want to find mine. Plus, your comments regarding all kinds of reproductive avenues to have children is very timely. I'm thinking seriously of freezing my eggs.
Yeah, I mean,
another
why not?
Way to go. Yeah,
it's just such a non-decision and. I mean, whether or not you do want to have children, but it'll always be an option that you can have.
Something to check out anyway. But and I, like I said, I think there's, I don't know about soulmates, but like there's definitely people that you're super compatible with. And the thing is like, I don't think there's just one soulmate. I think there's potentially hundreds of thousands on this here planet Earth. And it's all about like which ones are living in your zip code.
Exactly.
And finding those and not settling for the ones that aren't. The hellmates, you know, you want to get bogged down in that. You want to like, you know, get send in their packing notices as quick as possible so you could free yourself up for the fabulous soulmate.
Yeah. All right. Our next piece of feedback is from someone we've chosen to call the non-native speaker. We debated on calling you Mother Tongue also. Bonus name. They say, hearing what the good doctor Bazools said about single men and sexual intimacy really resonated with me. In normal counseling, I've never been able to get across my problem because more normal people really struggle to understand my lack of base knowledge. I described my lack of understanding on how to experience meaningful sexual intimacy this way to my friend. It feels similar to if I was trying to learn Spanish, but with no access to native speakers, no classes or teaching materials available, and only hearing it spoken once or twice a year in passing. Just an impossible task.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it too, and it's kind of like it kind of connects back with our single black female. Mm-hmm. That
we should connect them together.
Send in a headshot and your compatibility profile to OWT at we'll be match. That's yeah, our next podcast.
We'll be matchmakers.
But yeah, it's like. It's hard to get good at relationships. It's hard to get good at intimacy. How do you practice intimacy when you're not in a relationship? So when you're in a relationship, you can, you know, just start that right away. It's these are all difficult questions. And I think Dr. Pazules has got a valuable service here because that's the Spanish teacher, you know, Esperanto teacher that can take you under their wing and give you exercises and things you can work on. And, you know, a lot of relationship intimacy. And I think that's, man, isn't that one of the big problems that us guys have is that we don't really have any intimate relationships outside of our romantic partners? Like, it's exhausting to the partners in our life that we rely on them so much for our emotional needs and for sounding boards and for self-esteem and for encouragement and for compliments and all that thing. You know, that's one of the big problems. And I wonder if we wouldn't be better off practicing intimacy with our male friends, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not saying you should start blowing your buddies or whatever. I'm talking about emotionally here, you know, to have like real conversations where you allow yourself to be vulnerable and say, instead of being like, hey, how's it going? Oh, you know, it's outstanding. I couldn't complain. Whatever you say is just, you know, people that you're good friends with, you give them some straight answers once in a while. And if someone opens up to you, take the time to, you know, listen to them. And I think that's something that we just have missed out on historically. Like, you know, that stuff is how women have relationships, right? But I think it's something that we can practice at and get good at, and we'd be better off for it if we did.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Glad the good doctor could help. That's what she's here for. All right, that's all I've got this week. Aaron will be back next week for 3 Right Turns, and we'll be back in 2 weeks for more weird tricks. If you need advice or weird tricks, please don't hesitate to email us at owt@swizzbold.com. You can also find us on all of the social medias at Swizzbold. While you're at it, you should visit merch.swizzbold.com and buy some stickers to decorate or vandalize something, whatever, go crazy. Just a reminder, it's just the 3 of us over here, and this little operation wouldn't be possible without our Patreon supporters. You can become a patron if you are not already at patreon.com/swizzbold. But I especially want to thank all of our Fred level patrons by name: Kira Grusho, Arvind Rao, Jordan Hoyt, Dave Satterley, Brandon DeVito, Jenny, Byron Rasmussen, George P. Burdell, Lisa Singleton, Greg Rasp, James Taylor, Angelo Morano, Jared Harrelman, Laura Luthi, and Mark Hahn. Thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.